ओम ज्ञानतिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानंजनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Excuse me, there'll be some intermittent expectorating in this class, so excuse me for that. It's rude, but what to do? Excuse me also for being absent from Mangalati for 2 mornings in a row. I don't usually do that, but a bit jet-lagged and out of sync with the local time. You know how that word jet-lag in Russian, you have your own term, is it? I think that those who fly from Vladivostok to Moscow, they get jet-lagged. Like, was it quite a way around the world? Anyway, let's turn to more transcendental topics which will deliver us from birth and death rather than topics which help us to realize that we are in the world of death, such as birth, death, old age and disease, and among diseases is a modern disease called jet lag. Okay, well done. You're in good form this morning. That was a long opening sentence. So we may say, well, discussing our birth, death, old age and disease, that is, after all, a topic mentioned by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. What does Lord Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita in this regard? Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. Dukkha dosha anudarshanam means to see the miseries of birth, age, old, birth, death, old age and disease. Anudarshanam can mean to see again and again, but better it means to see through the parampara system. I'm sure you're back to Lord Nishimha, please. Now, we may say, well, it's not necessary to see through parampara, because just like Lord Buddha is said to have perceived the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease without going through the parampara system. And even without having a guru to tell you, someone who's philosophically inclined can perceive that the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease pervade the whole of material existence, which is therefore miserable. Well, that's obviously true. The evidence is there in Lord Buddha. Of course, even in his case, it was pointed out to him, or an insinuation of the misery of birth, death, old age and disease was made by preventing him from having any contact with birth, death, old age and disease. The attempt was made so that he wouldn't have any contact with them. But as fate would have it, he came in contact with these things, and then he thought, well, that's miserable, and better try to get free from birth, death. And to make a long story short, he became Lord Buddha. And he transcended birth, death, old age and disease, and according to Buddhist understanding, became nothing. But actually he was nothing before being nothing, just that he realized he was nothing. Which goes to show that simply understanding that birth, death, old age and disease are miserable, which is taught by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, is not the cure for birth, death, old age and disease. And that although realizing that birth, death, old age and disease are miserable is the entrance into spiritual life, it does not in and of itself constitute spiritual understanding. Even theoretical understanding of there being a God who has created everything, that's also not in and of itself spiritual understanding, which we... Someone's intention. Really? I thought it was some neighboring rock and roll concept or something.
Oh, it's upstairs.
As we see, people have theoretical understanding of God, but no information of who he is. They tend to think of him as the cosmic order supplier. That, dear God, here's this week's shopping list. Back pain, remove. More money, I asked you for that last week, you better give it to me, otherwise I'll stop believing in you. The order supplier. Prabhupada used this term. God, seeing God as our order supplier. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to, in Bengali, say that, put it in a more elaborate way, that seeing God as the supplier of fuel for the fire of our material desires. Mm. But, and none of these, simply understanding birth, death, old age and disease is miserable, and even expecting that there is a supreme controller but not having information of his transcendental personality will not free us from birth, death, old age and disease. So we're supposed to speak on the subject of the verse and the purport, and you may wonder, well, can I
wish I had done that.
But the point here is that It's being stated that as long as this Hari Lilamritam, the topics of the pastimes of Hari, are being the nectar of the pastimes of Hari are being narrated, as long as that's going on, that no one here will suffer death, which indicates that Hari Katha is actually Amrita, that which, yeah, okay, Amrita. Amrita means, you all know what it means, nectar. We still make all these nectar drinks in this one. When I joined, that was like, I used to have thick yogurt, they boil down the milk, make thick yogurt, put lots of honey and then some fruit, and they make these nectar drinks. It was a guaranteed knockout for any brahmacharya. Or anyone else for that matter. Prasad. No, it's we're more, that's fallen out of the ISKCON culture. Anyway, nectar means something which is very sweet and relishable and easy to take also. It's not like some of that pumpernickel bread or something that you have to chew about 50 times.
Bread?
Pumpernickel bread? No, no, it's German bread. It's like this salted bread. It's like that in the book. It's like, if you run out of bricks for building your house, you can use the bread. It'll probably be better. The only thing is the local horses might come and eat it because they're the only ones who can chew it. Well, horses and Germans. Anti-German jokes go down well in Russia. You're from Bangalore. You're Canada, Diga? Okay, so it's like making anti-Tamil jokes in Bangalore, in the non-Tamil area. I'm sure, there must be anti-Tamil jokes, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are plenty of them. Okay, let's get serious then, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. Nectar means it's very easy to ingest also. All you have to do is drink it. So another meaning of nectar, or the meaning of nectar, actually, Amrita, is not dead. Or no death. So Hari Katha is always compared to Amrita because it's very sweet and easy to ingest. It's very nourishing if one has the digestive ability to, if one has sufficient digestive ability. And it also stops death. So it's not really a side effect. That's the main lakshana. Characteristics. So by stating that as long as Hari Katha is being narrated, no one will suffer death, suggests that one who goes on hearing Hari Katha, they will be freed from death forever. So Hari Katha is equated with Amrita. There are two basic categories of Hari Katha. What are those two? Quiz time. Hearing and chanting. All right, he got it right. See, I can understand Russian. That which is said by Bhagavan and that which is said about. So the most famous Harikatha by Bhagavan is Bhagavad Gita. And topics about him are described throughout the Vedic literature, especially in Srimad Bhagavatam, which also includes many the words spoken by him. So the words spoken by Bhagavan that we receive in the Vedic literature is mostly tattva, tattva gyan, tattva katha, topics of philosophy, whether to use the rather inappropriate English word. Now, philosophy is actually not a very appropriate word because it suggests a search for understanding, whereas tattva gyan means a definitive exposition of reality. Because in the Western world, they're always searching and they never found anything. And, they've given up and they just say, well, you can't find it. You just have to look for it. That's all. So the endeavor of Western philosophy is that of a dog chasing its tail. And some of them come to the, well, that's absurd in itself. And some of them come to the, further absurdity of saying, well, is there any dog at all? Or, there's no dog. They become Buddhists. It's only in the... the dog is only a projection in the mind of someone who doesn't exist. So anyway, in Bhagavad Gita, and generally it's the Krishnasya Katha, that which is spoken by Bhagavan, it... Lord Krishna doesn't say, well, I'm... You know, I was just philosophizing the other night while I was drinking a few shots of vodka, And this is my latest theory. He doesn't say that, but rather he says, etat jnanam iti proktam, in that list of dhammamrityujaravyadhidukadoshanudarshanam, he says that this is knowledge. What I've spoken is knowledge. And even sometimes when he says, this is my opinion, well, it happens to be the opinion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which means it's a fact. Where in Bhagavad Gita can anyone give an example of Krishna saying, I think, in my opinion? He does say, yes, very good. Please say the verse. Okay, where is the word opinion? Mataha, this is my opinion. I consider that among all the yogis, the one who is always absorbed in me with faith, he is the best yogi. So Patanjali may have a different opinion and Jainari may have a different opinion, but as far as I'm concerned, and I happen to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna says, in my opinion, the devotee is the best of all. So, tatvajnana is it's knowledge of reality. And apart from the material reality, Krishna also describes the spiritual reality, which is the actual reality which underlies material reality. Not only are the dogs chasing after their tail, the philosophers, but they're chasing it's the wrong thing to chase after. The wrong thing to chase after. Have you seen that? You must have seen that. Russia's a dog-oriented country. It's one of those countries where dog is the man's best friend.
It is a problem.
Sure.
Yeah. It's in English also. It's one of the main tenets of Western civilization. It's like one of the characterizing features of the distinguishing features of West civilization. In God we trust, but we love dogs. So even if the dog did catch his tail, it wouldn't be of any benefit to the dog. So even if the philosophers did eventually manage to find out what this material world is all about, it wouldn't help them without understanding Krishna. And in fact, we can't properly understand this material world without understanding Krishna, because Krishna is the source of everything. There's the atheistic Sankhya or science of the fraud Kapila, Nirishwa, atheist Kapila. And there is the Sankhya of Devahuti Putra Kapila, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the son of Devahuti. I just engaged in some Sankhya philosophy. I just did a scientific experiment. It looked to me as if there was dust on this table. So to find out whether it was a fact or not, I put my finger on it, and I saw on my finger is dust, and on the table there's a line where the dust isn't anymore. So what's the conclusion of this experiment? The brahmacharis here are following Srimad Bhagavatam, which says that in Kali Yuga, brahmacharis will be dirty. So it's also said the grihasthas will beg from the sannyasi in Kali Yuga. So anyway, I suggest that... But actually, it's very difficult to understand anything about Krishna consciousness unless we are clean, first of all, which cleanliness comes in various categories, one of which is cleaning, keeping the house and all things around us. So anyway, Sankhya philosophy, both of the two Kapilas, the original Kapila Personality of Godhead and the imitation fraud who came later, their philosophies are more or less the same. That's why they're both called Sankhya. The only difference is that one establishes the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate principle of all reality and the other doesn't, which... even though the vision is the same, that both theists and atheists see this among the Sankhyaites, the Sankhya philosophers, they see this world, they analyze it, they both see the same thing and they analyze it in pretty much the same way, but their perspective on it is completely different. And the same thing is going on in modern science today, in which some scientists, in everything they study, they see the hand of God and the greatness of God. And the more they discover the fantastic complexities of everything, of nature, of numbers, of energies, then they more and more see the greatness of God. But the atheists, they consider, well, it's too complex for any person to have set it up. And therefore, in everything, the more complexity and the more The more they discover about nature, the more they're convinced that there's no God. Anyway, the point is here that even accepting the existence of God, that is not enough in and of itself to free one from death. One has to understand him as a person and actually enter into relationship with him. The relation is understood philosophically as that of servant to master, but one actually has to enter into that relationship to enter into the spiritual world, because in the spiritual world there's nothing else but service to him. The example of changing bodies, one example is given, just like a caterpillar goes from one leaf to another. More nature studies, you know? Most of the examples in Shastra are from nature, because people lived in natural society. So a caterpillar doesn't do a long jump from one leaf to another. It's an Olympic Games example. You can see the caterpillar charging up, jumping over. The caterpillar goes, arches its body up a little, puts it down, makes sure it's firmly situated there, then goes forward a little bit. In other words, the front part of his body is on one leaf while the gradually becomes on the one leaf while the back part is still on the other, and gradually he moves, gradually transfers his body so that there's nothing left on the leaf he came from, and he's completely transferred to the other leaf. Now if one attempts to leave one leaf without being firmly situated on another, then he'll fall into a chasm. Well, between two cliffs, sometimes there's like a long drop, and then and then you go in the newspaper the next day. So one has to transfer to the spiritual world, one has to gradually gain understanding of that and become situated in that atmosphere, even while being in this world. One gradually prepares oneself to go to the spiritual world. Vaishnava dharma is we talk about different religions, so although there's not really different religions, but if you want to take Vaishnava dharma as a religion in the philosopher's outlook, then Vaishnava dharma is the only one which gives knowledge of the spiritual world and how to prepare oneself actually to go there. So understanding that this material world is miserable, that gives us a platform on which to begin spiritual life, but it does not in and of itself constitute spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge is knowledge of that which is beyond birth, death, old age. So because of not having that knowledge, persons, the Buddhists, they fall into a vacuum, because of having very much incomplete knowledge. The Mayavadis, they get free from this material world, but they do not attain to Parampadam. They do not attain to Vaikuntha. And even people who, just like Buddhists, people like Lord Buddha, he didn't actually start a religion. He didn't say, okay, folks, now we're going to start the Buddhist religion. He never said that. Rather, he presented his realization. And inevitably, a religion grew up around it with rituals and beliefs and different philosophies and all kinds of paraphernalia of religion. So we find that people, they are born into the Buddhist religion. It's like in Thailand, for instance. The country is staunchly Buddhist, but it's very rare to find anyone who's even slightly interested in getting free from birth, death, old age, and disease. Even the monks. Of course, there is a fairly recent phenomena called the they call the Santi Asok, which is a Buddhist. They're like born again Buddhists. They're real Buddhists. They're trying to be real Buddhists. Santi Asok. They don't pronounce it. Born again, there's something like, you know, real hardcore Buddhists. But most people, Thailand's famous for being a country of material enjoyment, and people actually go from all over the world to enjoy the Thai women and children and prostitution. And the whole of Thai life is dedicated to sanuk, which means pleasure. For those of you who haven't gone to Thailand, you can remember that word, sanuk. It's a very important word in Thai language. among which the principle is the principal pleasure is considered to be, well, I don't have to give you three guesses, sex pleasure. And there's also the pleasure of eating all kinds of things, which really all kinds of things, except, well, all kinds of organic objects except human remains, otherwise pretty much everything else. So why should it be that people who profess themselves to be the followers of Lord Buddha are not the slightest interested in getting free from birth, death, old age and disease? Well, I asked a Thai this once. I said that, well, you know, in Thailand people are, now they do eat pretty much everything organic except human beings, but especially pigs, they're very fond of eating pork. So I asked this Thai woman that, don't you, I mean, according to Buddhist understanding, you'll have to become a pig in your next life because you're eating pigs. So she said yes, and I said, well, don't you think that's, don't you feel that's not a very good idea to become a pig? So back came the highly philosophical reply. Then, as a pig, I also have stanuk. Now, if Buddhism is dedicated to, you know, actual Buddhism means to perceive the, it is actually intense misery of birth, death, old age, and disease. It is a, like a declaration of war against any kind of material enjoyment. Now, how could anyone who calls himself a Buddhist be totally materialistic? It's a complete contradiction. Okay, what's the answer? Who's going to give the answer? Any suggestion?
Any reason is not the thing into which you are born.
Religion is not the thing into which you are born. All right, don't translate that. Any other suggestion? That is not the answer I'm looking for. It's all connected with the verse today. There's a clue. They don't have Hari Lilamritam. Though the prospect of becoming nothing, they'd rather become a pig than become nothing. I mean, the pig in between, you know, being slaughtered and, grunting like a pig. That wasn't a very good imitation. I have to practice. He enjoys life. In fact, Srila Prabhupada pointed out that the pigs are very happy creatures. That's why they're fat. Because they have no anxieties. They have sex and food and everything they could want. Because they're fully dedicated materialists. That's why they became pigs. And they are, surprisingly enough, apashyatam atmatattvam. They don't see knowledge of the self. So they're not sitting down and having philosophical discussions that, you know, this master is going to, who's feeding us very nicely, is one day going to come along and slit our throats. They're not George Orwell's pigs. You don't know about that.
Yeah.
You do know.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're pigs. They're happy and stupid. But that happiness is foolishness because it's actually suffering. But because the nature of the living being is to be happy by nature, he'd rather have the happiness of a pig along with its attendant suffering rather than having no happiness whatsoever by becoming zilch or zero.
No.
Shunya. Therefore, hearing about Krishna in the spiritual world with the gopis and the queens of Dwaraka and his running and playing and dancing and eating and stealing and all the wonderful activities that Krishna performs are the only method. Hearing this is the only method to actually transcend birth, death, old age and disease. By purifying the material desires and awakening the desire to go to the spiritual world, one very easily crosses beyond birth and death. So, Shravana Kirtana Karo Anukhana Asata Pachala Chari. Therefore, we should go on hearing and chanting about Krishna incessantly and give up talking nonsense. Kohe Premananda Manushya Janama Shafala Karo Na Bhari. This, the Padakarta, the author of the writer of this song, whose name is Premananda Das, says, we should make this human life successful by hearing and chanting about Krishna. And don't waste time. Don't delay. Okay, now for a little anecdote. Everyone likes stories, and it's an instructive narration of our Acharya, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. He was once in a place where there was a deity installation going on. It was not in one of his Goya mats. It was in a village where the deities of Sitaram were being installed in one temple. And he was in the house, probably of the local landlord, and he was speaking. And he was speaking means he was speaking Hare Katha, because he didn't speak anything else. When all of a sudden there was a commotion and the sound of screaming, and sounded that people were very upset.
The present people.
Yeah, the people who were present. Yeah. And the news came that just at the side, the youngest child of the house, the young boy, had fallen into the Yajna Kunda, with the fire pit. There was a blazing fire going on. Somehow he fell into that. So there was some commotion, and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur went on speaking Hare Katha. He said, don't worry, just go on. And it happened that that boy, even though he'd fallen into the blazing fire, was completely unharmed. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said that wherever Hare Katha is being spoken, there cannot be any tragedy or calamity. A related anecdote regarding Hare Katha from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur.
One more.
Yeah. Not really an anecdote, but something, an instruction. He said to, he was speaking to one man, that one should go on hearing Hare Katha throughout one's life, incessantly. Even if you get the news that your only son is suddenly on the verge of death, he said, don't go, stay and hear Hare Katha. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? Yeah, alright, I saw this hand going up first.
Comparing two cultures, Russian culture and ancient Indian culture, described in one of your books. Which
it's not ancient, it's contemporary. Ancient. It's based on, it's a culture which has been going on for thousands of years, but it's not, we're not talking about some historical antiquity.
Mm. So, what books would you recommend for Russian villagers to read? Because you just mentioned that even in India, people were not, there was some calamity and they were distracted from Hare Katha.
Yeah, it's not that everyone in India since time immemorial has been a great saint. I mean, Kamsa, Ravana, they were also in India. And there were lots of atheistic philosophers, just like Kama Mimamsa and this Kanad's atom theory. And there are so many. And
yeah.
Mayavad is also atheist. I mean, the influence of the Vaishnava Acharyas in India has been tremendous, but there has also been a lot of influence of atheists and semis, or Mayavad, which means semi-theists. Mm-hmm. So for Russian villagers, I recommend to read Bhagavad Gita as it is. Right? Otherwise, they're not. You see, people won't appreciate that culture unless they understand the reasoning behind it. Why are people all over the world very anxious to adopt American culture rather than Indian culture? Because America is the most successful country materially, and people are materialistic. So first of all, people have to be convinced of the necessity of adopting a spiritual way of life, and then the next thing is to get them to adopt a way of life which is suitable for spiritual cultivation. So first of all, people have to be convinced of the necessity of Krishna consciousness, which they'll get from reading Srila Prabhupada's books. And then the next thing is to convince people to adopt the culture which will help them to become Krishna conscious, which we seem to be having a hard time with in ISKCON, where we see that many newcomers to Krishna consciousness are trying to remain Westerners and be Krishna conscious at the same time. To prefer Western dress and music and food styles, and you're going to have a hard time going to Golok Vrindavan, and you know, they bring out the prasad and you say, hey, where's the pizza? And you say, there's no pizza. And you say, well, I'm going back to Russia. Or maybe I get born in Italy. Yeah, this damn dhoti, I don't like these dhotis, you know, where's the jeans? So we have to serve Krishna in on his terms, not on our terms. So we can, you know, it's not impossible to set the Maha Mantra and Vaishnava bhajans to rock and roll music and reggae music and all these kind of things, but that's more because we like it than because Krishna likes it. You know, we never hear of Krishna in his blue jeans playing electric guitar. So this, anyway, it's a big topic. Enough said for now. Yes, please.
How to combine properly listening to Bhagavad Gita and to narrations describing Krishna's pastimes, and how to hear them properly.
Okay. Well, read Prabhupada's books. Everything there is there perfectly in balance. Srimad Bhagavatam is it's Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. It's the scientific delineation of the reality of Bhagavan on the basis of which is developed or is expounded the pastimes of Bhagavan. So the perfect balance is there in Srimad Bhagavatam. Still, there is a question of eligibility. It's not that we just jump to the Rasa-lila section. That's why it's not just a matter of reading, but we also need to hear under the guidance of Srila Prabhupada and his representatives. We observe that Srila Prabhupada inevitably presented in his lectures the philosophical understanding of Krishna consciousness. He didn't go on for hours and hours telling stories of Leelas. And it's not to say that Leelas shouldn't be told, but Prabhupada was very concerned to see that we had a very solid philosophical understanding. In India, we'll find the professional Bhagavad speakers, they only tell stories with hardly a hint of any philosophy, just kind of presuming that everyone's already on the self-realized platform.
Which
obviously they're not. It's very clear from the narrations, from the lectures of Srila Prabhupada and of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, that they put very strong stress on their disciples hearing and imbibing a philosophical understanding.